What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Hi, guys. Oh my gosh, does it feel good to be back in this seat? I have missed it, you know. For anybody new here, I'm Gabby Allen and welcome to my show, What the Health. If you are interested in learning a thing or two about the fabulously interesting, outrageously weird and wonderful world of health and wellness, don't go anywhere, because in this show we meet some very inspiring individuals who specialise in their field under the wellness umbrella. We pick their brains and we separate myths from facts. Yeah, myths from facts. And we pick their brains on hot topics and we dissect and debunk all of the never-ending trends that we see on TikTok these days, because it is literally never-ending. So, I hope everybody has been well. I hope you've missed me. Not to fear, we have yet another amazing show ahead of us. Later in today's show, I will be chatting to Annabelle Fuller, professional golfer, and Dr. Emily Leeming, dietitian and author of A Genius Gut. But first up, we have the lovely Kate Holden in the hot seat. Hi, my love. How are you? It's great to see your beautiful face again.
Hi, Gabby. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm very happy to be back here because I had a few weeks off. So it's great to be back and the sun is shining. It's a great day. As you can tell, I'm in a very good mood. So talk to me. Your hair is looking gorgeous as always.
Thank you.
So Kate Holden is a clinical trichologist, right? So yeah. That's all things to do with our hair and our scalp health. What can people do to make sure that they maintain good hair and good scalp?
Yeah, so I think the main thing is that people often see their hair and scalp as a cosmetic feature, and they forget that it's connected to the rest of their body. So really, you know, you can have the most expensive, luxurious shampoo, the most thorough scalp routine in the world, but if you are not eating properly, if you aren't getting enough sleep, if you're super stressed out, this is going to have a huge impact. So you need to focus on your, you know, overall health first. That, you know, if you're looking after your body can look after your hair and your scalp. So that's a really kind of key thing.
I love that. If you think about it, because like everything that you put in, right, is going to come out in more ways than one, as we know. But if the hair is actually sticking to us, we want to make sure that it's full of the good stuff.
Exactly. And I think as well, people often think that the hair is dead because, you know, the shaft is dead, right? The ends are dead, but the root is very much alive. Our hair follicle has actually got, you know, some of the fastest dividing cells in our entire body, which is why it's so easily impacted by things like low iron. And I hear that you're talking to a new dietitian later, so I'm sure she can give you lots more information on this, but you know, really making sure that you've got the fundamentals right will make a huge difference. And then once you've got that right, then, you know, knowing your hair and scalp type are kind of secondary to that, but also still important.
Yeah, I think when I started my PT course, and I mean, this is many moons ago now, but when I really started honing in on my nutrition, I did notice a big impact in my hair.
Yeah.
Because I'd always had quite thin, I mean, I always had a lot of hair, but it wasn't quite, you know, thick. I've got extensions in now, so I'm not, you know, to just be transparent, but it definitely improved when I improved my nutrition, like tenfold. So I tend to wash my hair as little as possible because it's just an absolute mission. But should we be washing our hair like twice a week? How often should we be washing it?
So it totally depends on your hair type, you know. So if you've got curlier hair, you tend to need to wash it less often because it's a little bit drier, it can be more kind of prone to breakage. If you've got straighter hair and kind of an oilier scalp that often goes with it, then you can wash your hair more often. As a general rule, you know, once a week to once every 10 days for kind of curly hair. If you've got straighter hair, then, you know, 2 to 3 times a week is fine. But if you're doing lots of exercise, if you, you know, if you live in London, you know, you might want to wash it more often. If you've got dandruff, you might need to wash more frequently. So it's, you know, it's totally kind of dependent on your hair and your scalp type.
That's fair. I actually do get a lot of messages from people saying, you know, you train so much, like, do you have to wash your hair every day? It's such a pain. I'm like, guys, you just have to go for the slick Rick look. You just have to slap it back, because that's the only way that you can avoid washing your hair every day. And also, isn't it so that the more you wash your hair, the more you have to wash it? Is that right? Is it that your scalp cleans itself or something like that?
So there is part of that, yeah. I mean, if you're using very strong products, so if you're using kind of the stronger sulfates, or if you're, you know, if you shower in very hot water, or if you're really kind of scrubbing at your scalp, this can stimulate the sebaceous glands to produce more oil. So you might find that your scalp is oilier. But there's also, you know, fundamental things that we can't change. So, you know, hormones play a big role in how oily your scalp is, you know, how kind of fine your hair is, how straight your hair is. So, you know, again, it's sort of, it's really dependent. But if you're finding that your scalp has changed significantly, then have a look at, am I kind of really scrubbing my scalp? You know, am I kind of red when I get out of the shower because the shower's too hot? Have a kind of think about that.
That's me. When I get out of the shower, I'm like a lobster. It needs to be roast and hot. Is that not good?
It's probably a little bit too hot.
I want to be like, I like it to be, otherwise it feels cold. I don't know. I need it to be like roasting in there. Okay, great. I'm going to have to start getting cooler showers. And also you mentioned sulfate in there. So I can't use sulfate shampoos because it breaks down my keratin bond. But is sulfate a chemical that we shouldn't be using on our scalp anyway? What chemicals should we defo not be using?
So sulfates, you know, there's the kind of the strongest sulfates, which are sodium lauryl and sodium laureth sulfate, SLS and SLES that you might have heard of. These can be kind of more stripping of the kind of hair and skin. Some people are quite sensitive to them, but other people, you know, when I see people who've got kind of really oily scalps, we do need to use those stronger cleansers once a week or so. So again, it's not a kind of broad rule, but you know, most people are fine using kind of gentler, low or no sulfate products. That's absolutely fine. For kind of broader chemicals to avoid putting on the hair and scalp, I'm always very kind of cautious about, you know, if people are doing things like bleaching or dyeing or relaxing or perming their hair at home, these can go really wrong. So I would always recommend, you know, going to a hair professional.
Going to someone who knows how to do it properly.
Yes.
And then speaking of stuff that we should put on our hair, I mean, this is what TikTok says anyway. Rosemary oil I have used before, and it definitely like made my hair more malleable and like softer. But talk to me about rice water and eggs. Like, imagine cracking an egg on your head and then just like rubbing it in. That just sounds nuts to me.
Yeah, I mean, these are, you know, rice water and eggs, they do have, you know, amino acids and fat and vitamins in that can make your hair look shinier and could potentially help with kind of hair strength. But, you know, the benefits are often exaggerated. And I do find, you know, they're absolutely fine to try if you want to try them. But most of the time people try them once and kind of think this is, you know, it's so much easier to just use a conditioner. So
Yeah, just go and get a hair mask, guys. Yeah. Save your eggs for eating them. So, I am getting older, and I can't believe I'm even saying this on air. I did find like a greyish hair the other day. Maybe it was just a bit of bleach. We'll go with that. But can we reverse that? Like, can I become Benjamin Button and like go back in time and make my hair not grey?
I wish. Well, I mean, the answer is that we don't really fully understand the kind of full mechanisms of why our hair goes grey. There's still a lot of mystery behind it. But we do know that the majority of kind of greying is driven by age, obviously, but also your genetics.
Okay.
So that's the kind of main thing. But there are other factors that might impact how quickly your hair grays. So, you know, smoking, UV exposure, nutritional deficiencies, you know, potentially high stress. These might all have an impact. So you could potentially slow down some of that graying. You know, if you're smoking a lot or having a really kind of unhealthy lifestyle, it could help. But yeah, there's nothing that we can do to stop it in its tracks, really.
That's really sad, isn't it? I wish we could. It'd be great if we could. So what do you see as the biggest mistake that people do when coming to your hair? Like, I know there's the obvious things, like you can use, you know, like heat protection. Now you can even use that for sun protection and things. I only ever used to use it for when I was like straightening my hair, things like that. But recently, since I've been going away, since I've had extensions, I've been using it more. And apparently you should just use that anyway, because obviously if the UV can do that to your skin, then it's going to be doing the same to your hair as well, right? So yeah. What other mistakes do you see that people are using, apart from bloody egg yolk, that you would tell them to not do?
I think the biggest hair care mistake is thinking that there's a perfect routine and sort of applying what people see for other people's hair onto them. If there was a perfect routine, there would only be, you know, one shampoo and one conditioner. So I think that's a big mistake. I see people kind of rushing out and sort of spending hundreds of pounds on lots of different products and kind of really overcomplicating it.
Yeah.
So I would always say, you know, trust yourself. You know what products you like. Obviously, if you need more help, a hairdresser or a trichologist can help you. But yeah, I think, you know, trying not to kind of believe everything you see online and kind of, you know, trying to make other people's routines fit you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have been victim to this as well. But, you know, you see people do these routines and there's like 10 different products. And I'm like, how do people, A, remember how to do that? But if you're having a 10-step routine, or maybe with hair, maybe like 3 or 4, it's so expensive to be able to sustain that long term, isn't it? So like, is there specific products that you would say like are staples to just have? I assume a heat protection one, obviously shampoo, conditioner. Would you say like a serum after you wash your hair? What would you suggest?
Yeah, so I mean, 50% of the population has dandruff, so it's always worth having an anti-dandruff shampoo in your shower. Use it once a week or once every couple
50%. Of weeks. 50%? That's a lot, isn't it? Yeah. And what? Sorry, I'm just interrupting you here. Why is that? What's the reason for that? Is it environmental?
Yeah, it's partly environmental. So dandruff is caused by a yeast that lives on the scalp, and you know, half of the population are a bit sensitive to this yeast. So we kind of react to it and produce this kind of, little flakes and things. So that's why we need to use an anti-dandruff product, because it removes, the yeast from the scalp.
Okay. And heat protection, is there any in particular that you would say? I use the GHD spray.
Yeah. I mean, so again, it sort of depends. So if you've got curlier hair, you want to make sure that you're avoiding silicones, you know, heavy silicones, because that can build up on your hair. If you've got straighter hair, or you know, you use heat a lot, you might want to use a silicone based product. So again, it sort of depends. There's no kind of one size fits all. I would also, you know, I do encourage people to buy styling products, because you know, when you're sort of trying to help your routine, often people can kind of panic and think like, oh, everything's bad for my hair, I can't use hairspray or whatever. But, you know, there's a reason why we use these products. It makes your hair look great. So, hairspray, heat protectant, you know, a scalp serum, you know, a gentle exfoliator, shampoo, conditioner, hair mask, you know, that's all you need.
Really. It's actually such a good point. You either go one way or the other, don't you? You're like, I need to buy all of these products, or you're like, there's too many products to buy. I don't know which ones are actually going to work. Well, yeah. Your hair looks fabulous, as always. It did last time as well. Thank you so much for coming on the show again today. Obviously learned a lot from you, and I hope maybe I'll get to see you again very soon.
Yes. Anytime. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, my love. Have a great day. So fabulous. I love talking about hair. I am, even though I'm a bit of a tomboy, I am actually really good at hair and makeup. So I loved learning top tips from people like Kate, because I could take it into my glamorous feminine. What is it? In my feminine. I'm trying to get more in my feminine these days, because I am just like really masculine. This is something that I'm working on with my therapist, because apparently there's like female, feminine and masculine energies. So I'm trying to be more in the, you know, the fluid, glamorous side, as it were. Anyway, moving on, we're going to talk about core activator. So I have a lot of my clients say that, not a lot of them, but some of them come to me and they say, when I'm like lifting heavier, I end up getting, it hurts my back, or I feel like I don't have the stability to lift heavier, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, it all comes down to progressive overload and making sure that you are doing it in a safe environment, you know, like where if it is too much, then you can drop it off, or you've got a spotter. However, there is also a very staple fact that you can put in there to make it a little bit easier for you. Before you do any lower body workouts, you should always be doing some core activation. And it's literally as simple as doing 3 exercises beforehand. So for anyone that does find that their balance is off or the lower back hurts, put these three exercises into your next lower body. We're not wasting any energy that you can use for your hip thrust and your squats. It's just to get that core wrapped around that spine and to make sure that you are braced. So, you know, when you're doing like your deadlift or your squat or anything, you should always be expanding the ribs, pulling bracing the core, pulling the belly button in tight, ready to, you know, support your back as you take that descent. So get some dead bugs in there. We're literally looking at, I've put here 16 dead bugs, so that would be eight with each leg. Then you want to go into a plank for 30 to 60 seconds, holding it low plank, elbows down, belly button pulled in. You want to be making almost like a little arc with your body, so you're really thinking about pulling that belly in tight, squeezing those glutes. And then the last one would be a standing march. So standing up, holding one dumbbell or a kettlebell in one side, making sure that your core is stood up straight, pulling the belly button in, and you're giving me 16 marches, knees up to hip height, and then swap over and 16 on the other side. You should feel like you've just like kind of snatched that waist a little bit, ready to take on some heavier lifts. So add that into your lower body this week. Let me know how you got on, and I'll see you after the break.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
FUBAR Radio presents
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Joining me now, I have Claire Seal, who is a content creator and author.
You know, I think there's loads of shame when it comes to money and financial difficulty, but I honestly think that that shame is really a symptom of the judgment that exists in society. I don't think that people are feeling ashamed for the sake of it. I think they're feeling ashamed because you can't really sort of open your phone or open a newspaper without seeing these huge judgments piled on people who've made mistakes with money. And I think it's acceptable for people to slag you off about being bad with money in a way that it might not be for like other mistakes that you might make.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
Let's bring in Tobias Elwood, former Defence Minister.
Rishi Sunak has done well to pivot us back, taken us into far calmer political waters.
Has he taken you back into calmer political waters? I mean, you're on track, according to some of the polls, to the largest wipeout in years and, you know, may never return from it. I mean, how has he taken you back into calmer political waters?
We've just seen inflation go down to 2%. Confidence in business is returning.
But is that down to Rishi Sunak?
You've got to let me finish the question. You keep asking me a question and then throwing another question in.
I'm just curious to know, is inflation down to Rishi Sunak?
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
I have this stunning Steph Williams with me now, founder of the WeGlow app. I did turf games on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And it was horrible. It was horrible. But it was so fun. But it was like savage, right? Yeah. But I wasn't the best in the room and I hate that. And I was like, oh, God, I haven't trained like well enough for this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I don't normally think I am. But then when I was there, I was like, this is so annoying because. Yeah. And then I was like, why do I actually need to be good at this though? Yeah. Like, can I not just do it for fun?
But also, it's like when I've done like classes and stuff before, and the blokes were like, lift that heavier weight, and I'm like, no, like I'm good.
Yeah,
I don't need to lift the heavier weight. Like, I know what I'm capable of. I know what works for my body.
Yeah,
and I think it's just kind of like, I know what makes me feel good.
Yeah,
and ultimately, if you're working out to feel good, you're gonna look good.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. We are back in business.
Hello.
Hello, babes. So, here with me, joining me now, is Annabelle Fuller, professional golfer. How are you today, girl?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I bet you have a very busy schedule.
It's been okay.
So, I want to get to know you a little bit better, and I want the audience to get to know you a little bit better. So, we're going to do some quick fire questions, okay? So, okay. The trick is, answer them top of your head, first thing that comes to mind. Yeah?
Okay.
First one, three words to describe yourself.
Energetic, slightly crazy, that's kind of two words.
It's fine.
And then motivated.
Love that. Yes. Okay, next one. Driving range or golf course?
Golf course.
See, I know nothing about golf. I'm like, aren't they the same thing? You can explain that to me in a minute. Workout in the morning or the evening?
Probably evening.
Really? Interesting. What is your go-to cheat meal?
Ice cream.
Ice cream, yeah. I love it. I had some last night. And lastly, although I feel like golf is quite a zen sport, do you have a workout anthem? A workout anthem.
Anthem. You know, I don't. Kind of just changes on whatever my mood is.
Like, imagine listening to, like, tech, and when the beat drops, that's when you hit the ball. That's what I'd be imagining. Bump.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to me then. How did you first get into playing golf, and what is your favourite thing about the sport?
So I first started when I was very, very young because my older sister played.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, so I used to basically, I still do, to be honest, still copy everything she does.
Love it.
So I used to just kind of go to the golf course with her. She was really good when she was younger. So we started traveling as a family to do different golf tournaments.
So you're like and a golfing then, family then?
Yeah, so actually both my parents are tennis coaches.
Okay.
But their hobbies were golf. So my dad used to take my sister because he wanted to play golf. So then she would join in the range, and then it just became like a family thing that we always did.
I love that. That's one way of the men getting out of it. They're like, I'll take the kid with me. I'll take the kid, you know? I want to play golf. I'll take one of them with me. So you've mainly competed abroad, playing for the Florida Gators, which is so sick. Has it been easier to find opportunities outside of the UK? I feel like golf is massive in America though, right?
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, everywhere has tons of golf courses, especially, so I went to Florida and there's golf courses everywhere. Like wherever you're driving, most of the houses are on a golf course, whether people play golf or not, they live on a golf course.
Yeah.
So kind of over there, there's endless opportunities.
And has there been more opportunities out there than there has been in the UK?
I'd probably say so, just because there's that big like college aspect, which when people go to universities, they can play for their school, and then that helps to kind of provide opportunities.
Oh yeah, because they get you know, like sports scholarships and stuff like that, don't they? I only know this from watching films, and you know, like you've got the jocks and that, the rugby players. Mm-hmm. So you turned professional early this year. Congratulations, that is amazing. What was that like? Was it like the pinnacle moment of your life so far?
Honestly, it was more so I did qualifying school at Christmas, which is where they do it once a year, and there's a certain amount of spots available to get your full tour card. So it's, you play three rounds as a pre-qualifier, and there's four different sites with like 120 players, and then you play in the top 20 from there, go on to final stage, where there's another 30 pros who lose their card, automatically gets in. And then it's another 120 pros all playing for 20 spots to get their tour card.
Wow.
So I went through that. Yeah. It's a long, so it's 2 weeks back to back. So it's a pretty tiring kind of trek. But then I, like when I played then and I was kind of finishing up the last hole and I knew I'd got my tour card, I think that was a bigger moment for me because I was like, wow, like I've worked my whole life for this and now I have it.
That is amazing. So 2 weeks of playing golf, you must have some regime then when you get up in the morning. Do you have to like meditate or, you know, get yourself in the headspace to be able to go and do the same thing that day?
Yeah, I mean, especially kind of going to that second week, it's five rounds, which typically a tournament is three or four. So it's just like every single day, like going, okay, it's the first day, like there's a lot of golf to be played. You just got to like stay in it and not kind of let your mind have kind of go off if you have a bad shot or a bad day. Like a lot can be made up as well.
I can't even imagine the process of even being able to hit, I don't even like a good drive or whatever you would call it. Like I have tried to play mini golf before and I'm terrible. So the absolute like focus and, you know, discipline that you must have had to get to your level now is amazing. Like you should be so proud of yourself. And also like going against all those people, you know, that when there's a certain added level of competition from other people, it always adds the extra pressure. So still to be able to have that, you know, the bigger picture in mind is amazing. Good for you.
Thank you.
Did that come from your parents then? How you were brought up, seeing them, you know, did they help you with that, the motivation?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like, I do think it's like part of someone's like personality as well. Like I'm quite, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. So like for me,
driven.
My whole life I've been, yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Like if I'm planning to do something, I'm going to put all my effort into doing it and I'll give like 100% rather than try and do like five things at once, kind of. And I think like my dad, obviously, so he was actually a tennis professional and he tried to make it as pro. And then that led him to tennis coaching. So I think I'm very similar to him in that aspect, like very, very focused, very driven and like motivated. So I think that kind of like went into me.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think, you know, I also had the same. My dad was a rugby player and then my brother went to play rugby and, you know, my nan was a dancer. So it kind of, it does rub off on you. And I think that's really good to have that discipline from a young age. Speaking of which, though, do you find that in the golfing sport, it's still, I mean, it's still such a male-dominated industry, sport, you know what I mean? So how are you navigating that as a newly professional female athlete in the environment?
I mean, I feel like you have to be pretty accepting of the fact that there are certain things that men and women are different of. We're never going to be the same as a guy. Like, they're going to always hit it further. They're going to always have certain things that we won't have, and like, just because they're a guy. And I think it is difficult. I played a mixed event at the start of June. And I think to kind of see, kind of go to an event, how a men's event was set up, that was a bit of an eye-opener to see like the disparity between how our tournaments run versus theirs, just because they have a lot more money.
Mm.
And obviously like with media coverage as well, I think I've just like learned that women don't have the same opportunities to get like people interested in the sport. And it's not just about the money.
Mm. I think from the people that I've spoken to on the show, in women's football and stuff as well, it's the same across the board. And you know, everyone's do as you know, female empowerment, we're all trying to, you know, get as much media coverage and stuff as they can for these different sports. But do you think there's like a stigma around female golfers? Like, you know, it is quite a new thing for females to be involved in the sport, right? How do you think we can get more women involved? Do you think children should be introduced to it? Like, what's your take on that?
I mean, honestly, it's like changed quite drastically the last couple of weeks for me, I think. I've met a couple people who've just started up golf and I realized how much they loved it. And they were like, I didn't realize, like, it's so much fun. It's so much harder. And like, now I'm addicted to getting better. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like,
yeah.
Oh no, it's so cool how good you hit it. And like, for me, I was just always, oh yeah, I'm the girl who plays golf. Oh yeah, that's like the old guy sport. But I think now when more and more people are introduced to it and they've realized kind of, no, there's more like athletes who play golf, I think it makes it look cooler. And until you do that and like you realize, I think it's hard to kind of grow the game. So I think that's like really important to get more girls who are like younger kind of looking up to people and going, oh yeah, they're actually cool. Like, it's not my dad going out with like a bunch of old guys drinking beers playing golf. Like, they're actually playing.
Yeah, maybe you could start like a community for, you know, younger girls to get involved, and then you can show them the ropes and show how hard it actually is. I'd come.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Let's do it. I'd love to do that. So speaking of other athletic departments then, I know that you're a fan of CrossFit, right?
Yes.
So do you find that being a golfer and a CrossFitter, do they complement each other? Because obviously, like, the actual contrast between them is just so vast. How do they help each other?
Yeah, I think like when I say to people, yeah, I do CrossFit, and they're like, but you play golf. I'm like, yeah, but I also do CrossFit.
I could do both. Okay.
Yeah. I think personally, I have noticed that like one does help the other. Like, I know that a lot of girls struggle and guys struggle with little like injuries and stuff just because of like imbalances, because obviously golf is very one-sided. You swing one direction. Whereas CrossFit, I would say, is you've got to have like everything quite equal.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing a pull-up, you can't just use one arm and like give up with the other one. Or if you're holding a weight over your head, you've got to use both arms, obviously. So I think that helps with my balance a lot. And then also speed-wise, I've gained a lot of speed since like kind of going more into CrossFit. And it's helped with like strength and stability.
I think that's actually quite interesting. As So as a consumer watching golfer, it is quite minimal movement, right? So you wouldn't, I wouldn't necessarily think that there would be a whole like training regime. This is just me being like completely ignorant to, you know, golfing, because I've never really delved into that world. So is there actually a training structure that you have to do as a golfer?
Yes, I think that's one of the kind of things that people miss out on, I would say. If you look at the men's pro golf and you look at like the longest, like the top golfers, they all hit it miles.
Yeah.
And then you play with someone who just plays for fun and is a pretty good golfer, but they won't hit it nearly as far, because I think people forget that obviously length is a huge element in golf too. And that obviously comes from how strong you are and how far you can hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that obviously then the way you get stronger, the way you hit it further, is by training in the gym.
Yeah, power.
And then like, applying it to your swing.
Yeah.
So like when I play with, I don't know, a couple like guys from my golf club, I'll hit it the same length as them. Or if anything, like I'll outdrive a lot of them as well.
I bet they're like, what is going on here?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, why is it going? I think that's kind of, people don't realize how much longer the men hit it because they train. And it's like, well, for me, okay, when I'm playing with a guy, but like for a woman to hit it as far as a guy, it's quite difficult, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think like you kind of take that kind of for granted almost. It's like, oh yeah, she's a pro. Well, yeah, I'm a pro who works out.
Yeah, exactly.
I work out that I hit it far.
Yeah. It's not just that, I'm not just like, well, you are gifted, obviously, but it's not, you weren't just born with this amazing swing. You've actually like worked for it. Oh, that's just typical men though, isn't it? Sorry for any men listening, but it is. Like, oh yeah, it's a woman. Okay, so do you do any, like, I suppose you don't need endurance or anything, like apart from when you're walking between like places from pitch to pitch. God, I don't know. I literally am terrible with these, holes to holes. But do you enjoy any of that kind of training as well? Like more of a hybrid stuff, or is it all just about powerlifting?
No, I love the hybrid stuff. So that's my favorite. And honestly, that's what I'm actually better at. So like when it's like a long, like chipper workout where it's like 40 minutes, that's where like, it's like, okay, yeah, this is for me. This is my day.
I love that. So what's the difference then? If the chipper workout, so that, what's the difference between that and then something else?
So like CrossFit has, and this is personally why I love it so much, is you have so many different elements.
Mm-hmm.
So you have kind of like a high rock style, you can do workouts like that where it's just kind of running and like dumbbell weights and like a very engine-y cardio workouts. Then you have a mix where there's a lot of like gymnastics. So I used to do gymnastics when I was younger, so I love it when we can do like,
you're just an all-rounder really, aren't you?
I try. But like I love doing like the gymnastic stuff, handstand walks, all of like the bar stuff. And then there's obviously the weightlifting aspect. But then the weightlifting aspect, there's also, you have in a workout, you can have 20 power snatches that are really lightweight, but you're doing it really quickly.
Yeah.
And then it ends up being like cardio alongside like running, rowing, biking. So you just kind of, however the day is kind of split, you might do weightlifting to start, then a short kind of sprinty wad where it's heavier weights, and then you might do a cardio style wad.
Yeah, I did that when I used to be a member at Third Space. We used to do workouts like that, and it was always just like savage, because I can do them all separately, but when they're put together, I'm like, mm-hmm. You people are crazy. So last question then. I want to know, what is your big dream? Like, where can you see yourself going? What are we manifesting for Annabelle in her golfing career?
I think there's like two elements. Obviously, golf-wise, I want to get to the point where I'm as good as I can possibly be and like competing with like the top golfers in the world. But then I also want to be able to do that while also like growing the game with everyone and showing that golf is a sport, basically. That like, it's not just a leisurely thing you go out and do in the evening as like whatever. It's like just as hard as every other sport. And I think like, know that everyone can do it and kind of grow it in that way too.
I love that. We're going to remember your name as like the woman that made golf for women big time. I love that for you. Well, good luck with everything. I hope it all goes to plan. I'm sure you're going to do amazing things, and hopefully we can get you on in the future when you're going to be this big, well-known star for making golf for women.
yeah, that would be great.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, babe. Have an amazing day. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye. How amazing, right? I'm all for this female empowerment within sport. Coming after this, we're going to be joined by yet another fabulous woman, Dr. Emily Leeming, dietitian and author of A Genius Gut. See you then.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
FUBAR Radio presents
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Joining me in the studio was AJ and Curtis Pritchard.
When I used to go on Strictly, I used to think of it as like a public service. I'm entertaining somebody for 90
and
seconds.
And we salute you.
And
thank
just like,
you, AJ.
I want people to forget about their problems. I know it's a really weird mentality.
No, it's a... You are right in a way, right? Because there
but
are
you never
people
made
that
the final.
There was no need for that.
What the Health with Gabby Allen. I'm joined by fellow Love Island contestant, Adam Maxted, and professional wrestler, may I add. If you could wrestle any celebrity, who would it be?
I'm trying to think who would be...
Someone needs to like be like your height, your size. Come on, you've got to be fair about it. It can't be like a little weasel.
Maybe like Anthony Joshua or something.
Jesus, really? You reckon you could take Anthony Joshua?
In a boxing fight, probably not.
But in a wrestling match. Yeah.
In a wrestling match, I back myself.
Okay, fair.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
TikTok sensations Jack and Sorrel. Iconically, there have been some amazing celeb couples. Who would be your favourite of all times,
David Beckham and Victoria?
Girls.
I just think, like, the twists and turns of it all, but still being together like that to me is peak celeb.
For me, do you know what? I just love a good power couple. We had Beyonce, Jay-Z. Like,
yes.
I want them to reign highly. I want them to be girl bossing, man bossing, just bossing throughout, and us obsessed with them separately and together.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Well, hello, welcome back. We now have a very interesting chat. I love talking about this subject. We have Dr. Emily Leeming, and she's the dietitian and author of A Genius Gut, which looks like a very weighty, educational book in front of me. Hi, love, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on. You're looking fabulous.
Thank you, likewise.
So, tell me about your book then, A Genius Gut.
Yeah, so it's a simple guide to the science of the gut-brain connection, and there are 10 easy hacks on what to eat for your mood, cognition, and brain power. And effectively, it's based on my background as a dietitian, but also a microbiome scientist at King's College London, but also sneaking in my former career, which was as a chef. That's really how I got into this. Was
oh my God,
cooking. Yeah, absolutely.
You've literally hit it from all sides.
Well, you know, there's no point in having healthy eating if it's not going to taste good and you're not going to enjoy it. So for me, that's such a huge part of it.
So is it a recipe book?
There are no recipes, but I'm very particular about giving lots of different advice on to kind of what foods to put together, kind of lots of tips and advice on shopping lists, hacks, how to kind of cook things in a way that makes it taste good, you know, how to combine foods to make it really great for your gut health, but also something you're going to enjoy as well.
So are there actual foods that you can put together that make a better combination for different functions?
So it's kind of like, one of the key parts I talk about in the book is like how actually you're putting those foods together to help you feel fuller for longer, have more energy, and it's going to keep you going through the day. And then, of course, end up with less cravings later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just going to make it so much easier to kind of eat foods that are going to help support your gut bacteria, and then help them to do that job and producing all those special molecules that they produce, which then influence the rest of your body, including signaling to your brain. This really exciting early evidence around how they can communicate to our brain and influence our mood and how we think, how sharp we are, our memory. It's really amazing.
Well, I mean, even just as a novice on the subject, when I haven't eaten anything, even when I eat straight away, I feel like I've got more energy or something. So to know a little bit more about that would be interesting to be able to tap into that a bit further, you know?
Absolutely. And I talk about this a lot in the book, because obviously that's, you know, what the book's about. but it's even, you know, simple, easy things like making sure you start the day with, you know, having kind of 2 glasses of water. You know, they've seen that that can improve your mood straight away. It can improve how your mind works, because our brain really kind of notices when it's dehydrated. And also it's the most kind of energy hungry organ, it's our brain. So by making sure that we're kind of having a breakfast, so like a protein and fiber rich breakfast, that's really going to kickstart your day and kickstart it for your gut bacteria as well.
It's crazy the amount of people that don't drink enough water, you know. Like, I see it all the time. I'm like, this is like just something that should be so, come so easy to us. It's the, you know, we're so lucky to have it at our fingertips in this country anyway. It's like, drink your bloody water. So I want to ask you about your 10 simple hacks to help improve your gut-brain connection. Can you give us a little flavour about what they are?
Yeah, so really the essence of them is that you don't have to think too hard about what you need to do and what's going to have the maximum impact for your health. So there's no kind of stressful, oh, I've got to count this, or I've got to, you know, log this into an app or kind of write down. It's literally, how can I know straight away by what I'm buying at the shop, at the supermarket, what am I putting on my kind of essentials list, that it's just going to be in my store cupboards already. But also, how can I just look at my plate and know automatically, okay, I need to maybe amp up, you know, my fruits and veg here because I haven't quite got enough, or kind of add some nuts and seeds for some extra fiber. So they're very much simple, practical tips.
So when it comes to building a plate then, I know that you need micronutrients, macronutrients, like your fats, your proteins, and your, what's the other one? Carbs. Forgetting the best one on there. Is there anything like just off the top of your head that I would be missing first and foremost there?
So the thing when we talk about your gut-brain connection, and particularly your gut bacteria, so helping them to produce those special molecules that then influence the rest of your health, is really about fiber. So fiber is the roughage from plant foods like fruits, vegetables, beans and legumes, nuts and seeds, and whole grains. So really trying to make sure that we're amping up that proportion of our plate. So one of my hacks in the book is really simple. It's effectively making half your plate fruits and vegetables. So that's just literally eyeballing, okay, actually I can add a bit more in here, just so I'm making sure that I'm getting that fiber in there. And that's really going to help your gut bacteria to thrive, because most of us are not getting enough fiber. We're having only 60% of the recommended 30 grams of fiber a day, so we've got this big deficit.
I'm
very, very keen that we need to be giving fiber a rebrand. I feel like it's like Clark Kent, where before, you know, anyone recognised that actually he's Superman and he's got these superpowers. It needs a reputation rebrand.
I love that. I mean, he needs fit as well, so.
Exactly.
So I actually think I eat like a lot of fruit and veg, and I feel it in my body when I haven't. Like, I went to Glastonbury and there was all just like fast foods, and obviously you can't take loads of things with you. And I literally came home and I was like craving fruit and veg. I hadn't eaten any of it. So I feel like once you also get into the habit of eating more of it and you feel how good it feels for your body, like everything just works a little bit better as well, right?
Yeah.
It becomes addictive, or like you just want to like keep going, like you feel like your body's functioning more optimally, right?
Yeah.
I've spoken to a lot of nutritionists or dietitians, and as I said, I love this topic on gut health. There's just so much to it. How important is it for you, the gut health, like how it impacts the body, like the rest of the body? It's not just about, you know, fiber and all those things, but how does it improve like your skin, your overall, like, you know, brain function, like how you are, your mood, your sleep, all of those things?
Yeah, so when I start talking about this, I think some people are like, wow, this seems a bit fantastical. How can these like 100 trillion microorganisms that live in your lower intestine that you can't even see, how can they be influencing the health of the rest of our body from our gut? And I think I really talk about, let's look back to before humans, you know, even existed on this planet. You know, the whole planet was covered in microbes. Microbes were here before us. And so there's no point in our kind of life course or even evolution where we haven't evolved with these microbes. So it's not just in our gut, but also we've got a skin microbiome, and we have microbiomes in lots of different areas of our body as well. So we're half, you know, we have as many microbial cells as we have human cells. So if aliens were to come down from space, they'd probably think of us as like a hybrid species. So this is just like giving context that actually these microbes do so much in terms of our health. They're not just kind of bit players in our digestion. They are signaling and communicating with our skin, as the biggest organ of our body, with our liver, with our lungs, with our heart, and also with our brain.
They all work together, right? That's what I learned before as well. Like one, there's five of them or something. There's like different, I can't remember all
that. Now we're even talking about the fact that there's a brain microbiome. So it's all really exciting research in the last 20 years because we haven't had the technology to be able to explore it until really this last 20 years because we just need that text. It's very complicated to kind of, we call it sequencing the microbiome, the gut bacteria to understand who they are and what they do. And it's what they do that we really care about.
I love how excited you are about this.
I love it.
I love talking to people when they're excited about stuff because it makes me excited. I'm like, tell me more. So speaking of the exciting part of the gut health is food side of things. You were a chef before, right? So did that like kind of push you in the way of going to gut health?
Yeah, so I read a book called Gut by Julia Enders, which was out years ago, and it effectively was the first time I came across anything to do with the gut microbiome. And at the time I was working as a chef, I was actually working as a chef on super yachts. It wasn't quite as exciting as Below Deck, but it was still pretty great. And I was just really getting very interested in how, yes, food tastes delicious and it makes you kind of happy and feel good, you know, straight after it, but also really wanting to understand what about also feeling, you know, that energy, that mood,
yeah,
you know, being able to move your body kind of longer than that. Where is the science in that? How can I kind of bring that in? So I then went and moved to Australia actually and did my training as a dietitian.
You've lived 1,000 lives. Bloody hell.
Well, I think it's just, you know, trying to trying to make the most of it.
No, it's amazing, of course, yeah.
But then, yeah, ended up getting really nerdy and into it and did my PhD at King's College London with Tim Spector, was my supervisor.
Wow.
And then I've been working at King's College London for the last, working as a microbiome scientist and researcher, continuing to research this topic.
And she never chefed again.
Yeah, now it's like it's so funny. The way I approach food has so changed. Before it was like, oh, I'm going to do this beautiful fine dining, you know, spend hours and hours. Now I'm like, what is simple? What is quick? What is affordable? How can I, you know, do this that will taste delicious, but also is great for my health as well?
Yeah. And there's like, there's so many different things that you have to do that rather than just making food look nice, like we have to have like 30 plants across the week, right? And we have to have like probiotics. There's so many things, like we're even just talking to that to Kate before about her stuff, like there's so many different things that you have to do, like to, you know, in life to feel like you've actually accomplished what you need to do. There's hair health, there's gut health, there's all these things. Probiotics being one of these main buzzwords that we see all the time, yeah, these days. Yeah. Is it a marketing tool or is it actually like legit? Do we need them?
So I think we've got to the point where kind of overcomplicating what gut health is. I think probiotics are a kind of strain, a type of bacteria, which when you take it in high enough or enough dose, it is then having an effect on your health. So we've got really exciting, interesting research from the science side that is showing that these can help with your memory and cognition, helping to support your mood, helping to ease stress. So we've got this kind of really amazing research coming in. How that's translating though to products is a bit of a minefield, is a bit of a wild west. So for an example, I know that our supplement and probiotic industry is slightly different from the US, but it's similar enough to compare. And there was a study in Washington, D.C., where effectively they found that only 30% of probiotic products actually had the types of bacteria in there in the right dose that were actually kind of support, that were kind of true to the claims that they put on the product.
That's crazy, isn't it?
So it's really, I think it is really difficult for people to understand, you know, what probiotics to take because they've got all these like sexy marketing, right?
Yeah. And also, right, isn't it like, we're all different. We might all have a trillion microbiomes in there, but we all will need different ones to help different things. So how can one probiotic universally work for me and you, you know, for example, and then that guy that's walking past out there, that's what blows my mind sometimes because I'm like, well, since doing this show, and I'm like, oh, well, that can't work for everybody. But I suppose it makes people, it's like placebo effect, right? It makes people feel like they're actually doing what it says out to do.
I think I'm really like big on okay, what if you're going to spend your money, like, what's the biggest bang for your buck that you can do that for? And I think actually we've got to remember that, you know, our microbes are everywhere. So even just one apple contains 100 million microorganisms. That's effectively like nature's kind of probiotic, right? So actually, is it better for our gut health to maybe spend that money, if you want to spend that money, on getting like a fruit and veg box delivered each week?
Or yeah, that's just a good idea.
Maybe like, you know, helping if you've got a busy lunch and you're having to kind of run out from work, being like, actually, I'm just going to buy a nice salad, and that's going to be my kind of way of helping it.
I think it's like I used to, you know, supplement with like greens, and which I have done before, and I think it's a good way, maybe if you're time poor and you don't necessarily have the chance to cook for yourself, or if you're traveling a lot and stuff like that, I would recommend maybe supplementing in certain ways with that, you know, like make it a multivitamin, things like that. But I would always say the same as you, like take a food first approach, because that's what, as you said, like each and every fruit and veg has got so many different micronutrients in there that it's going to be way more beneficial than taking one little oral capsule.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think also like thinking about, so in the book I talk about, you know, there's like lots of different other components in foods that aren't found in kind of micronutrient supplements or the things. So I think we talk about kind of multivitamins, for example, there's like maybe like 50 different types of nutrients in there. Actually, our foods contain up to 26,000 biochemicals. And then when it comes to our gut health, for example, there are lots of different types of fibers that are found in these plant foods, and also lots of different types of polyphenols. There's 8,000 types of polyphenols. So this sounds like a very kind of new buzzword.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
But effectively, it is a group of antioxidants that contribute colour to the fruits and vegetables that we love and know. So that vibrancy of the purple of an aubergine, for example, that is because
I love
of the
aubergines.
That's the polyphenols. Yeah, they get a bad rap.
I know they do.
They do. So
it's because if they're done wrong, they can be a bit squishy.
Yeah, they just, we just, you know, we need to put some delicious kind of Asian fusion or something going on there.
The chef is back, great. Guys. Yeah, I love it. What's the most exciting thing then? I mean, everything that you talk about sounds exciting, and I can see it in your eyes that you just like, you're like, the research. I'm like, oh, I want to know more about this research. But what has been the most surprising and most exciting thing that you've learned whilst writing the book?
I think just really kind of doubling down on how we talk about health. So I think there's two things there. First, for me, I think we've always thought about the brain as being kind of separate to the rest of our body, where that we just know that's absolutely not true at all. Your gut and your brain are kind of anatomically linked, and it's not just about your gut bacteria. It's also the fact that your gut is seen as your second brain, and there's lots of communication going on. And I think we've talked about health as in physical health and mental health as being very separate. So for me, that's just, you know, just not true and not the case at all.
No.
We really need to be changing the conversation around that. The second thing is also talking about what is health. And I think we've kind of thought about, oh, health is just like trying to prevent some disease that's like really far flung and far down the line. And don't get me wrong, that's really important. But really changing that narrative about health being how you feel right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like your energy levels, feeling like you're mentally sharp, your mood, being able to move around. Like, that's really important, because that's effectively, you know, each of your day is a piece of a puzzle that is your life. And, you know, you want to be feeling as best as you can and kind of feeling amazing day to day as well.
I love that. You said mentally sharp, and I was thinking, What can I do to make myself more mentally sharp? Like, today, I feel, like, really on it. But then there are some days where I'm, like, I take Lion's Mane because I used to have caffeine and I don't have caffeine anymore because it was making me a crazy person. But now I feel like if I'm, you know, eating better, exercising and drinking my water, I am definitely more mentally sharp. But there are days that I'm not. So it's like maybe making a log for each individual as well. I'd be like, well, okay, what did I do today? I know you're saying like necessarily tracking through the app, but if you do notice that from certain days you are performing a little bit differently, then maybe you look at it and say, okay, what did I eat yesterday?
I actually have in the back, so talking about that, in the back of the book, I have, you know, you can basically log, it's your food and mood tracker. So if you're just feeling like, actually, I just want to do a week of this, so you're logging, okay, this is my energy levels, this is, you know, where my mood is, actually, are there any patterns that I can see for myself? And it's like taking a week to deep dive into that can be really helpful. And then if you're really struggling, you know, do go and see like a nutritionist or dietitian to kind of help you if you're feeling like that's something you can have impact for. Or, you know, feel free to have
get
a look
the
book.
Yeah.
Look at Genius Girl.
I can't wait to read it. Can I have this one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much. I literally have it in the library. I'm just going to be so smart by the time I stop doing this show. No, it looks amazing. You sound amazing and you're so excited about it. So it makes me excited to read it too. So thank you so much, Dr. Emily, for coming on today. Yeah. I hope I get to meet you again soon. I'll let you know what it's like. It might take me a while to read it, but once I've read it, I'll be in touch and let you know my thoughts.
Amazing. It's very good for dipping in and out. It's very...
Okay.
Yeah, it's very much.
That's good to know. I'll read it on my train home in a bit.
Perfect.
Thanks so much for coming in. It's so lovely to meet you. Take
Thanks
care.
So much.
So guys, that is the Gut, A Genius Gut book by Emily Leeming. Thank you so much. It looks like a good read. And I think it's just so important for us, as Emily said, to, you know, health isn't just running. It isn't just feeling physically healthy. It also comes down to your mental health. It comes down to your gut health. There's so many like contributing elements to health as this, you know, this overall umbrella word. And we all need to really be looking at it from each and, you know, each direction for a full 360 approach. So I'm definitely going to be reading that book. It sounds like it's going to be a good one. So let's talk about some listener questions then, guys. Just speaking of which, if you have any burning desire questions that you want to ask, send them in to What The Health Show on Instagram, at What The Health Show, and I will get back to you next week if your question gets chosen. Make it exciting. But to this week's questions, we have Kirsty says, I have recently added cardio into my routine. So she does 4 days 4 days of weightlifting now and 2 days of cardio with one rest day. Is this okay? And am I going to lose gains by doing this? So I am a firm believer that everybody should have some sort of cardio in their routine. It maintains your level of cardiovascular fitness, you know, so you can run for the bus or you can play with your dog or you can play with your kids. And to stay agile and able, like, we should definitely still be moving our body in that way alongside strength. Also, it's only going to benefit your strength because it's going to enhance your recovery. It'll flush out those toxins. It will help release that lactic acid, and it will help you get back into that gym, back to that barbell a little bit faster. And then also, cardio is a great tool if you are looking to expose those muscles that you've made with your strength and to burn that excess fat. So yes, you should be doing cardio, and know if you're lifting heavy enough in your sessions and having your recovery and your protein, obviously, you shouldn't lose the muscle mass that you've worked so hard to get. So moving on to David's question, what is L-glutamine and should I be using it? So I also looked at using L-glutamine before, but I ended up not getting it because there wasn't actually enough research from what I could see to prove that it was going to do what it says it needs to do, benefit. Basically, it like helps your muscles to grow, essentially. But there has been some research to show that it can improve recovery time and decrease muscle soreness, as the amino acid in the L-glutamine plays a crucial role in controlling glucose uptake by the muscles after exercise, which can help restore their energy stores. However, your body already naturally produces this. So in order... From what I've read, in order to for it to make a big difference, if you were to supplement it, you would have to be taking like quite a substantial amount. The only way, which I would not recommend to do this, but is to, you can take certain injectable amino acids, which can help increase your HGH and testosterone. But as an oral dose, you're better off just getting a good night's sleep, getting that protein intake in, and lifting heavier weights. And you know, if you're having a sufficient balanced diet, you should be able to get the what you want to achieve out of that anyway. So hopefully that helps. Basically, get yourself a balanced diet, get to the gym and rest and recover, and you should be fine. And then lastly, Millie said, and you know what? This resonated with me quite hard. Millie said, I'm going on a girl's holiday next month, but I recently broke up with my boyfriend and it's affected my confidence. So I'm tempted to cancel. Do you have any advice? Millie, do not cancel the holiday. Do not let, I don't know what happened, but do not let anybody, male or female, bring your confidence down. You need to as we know, you need to really be working on self-love. As we know that I've been doing this, get yourself into a routine of every day you tell yourself how amazing you are, you work out, you eat well, get yourself prepared to get on that holiday and feel the best that you can in your bikini. Talk to your friends, tell them how you're feeling, and they should be able to support you on that because you deserve this holiday, hon. Nobody should bring you down, and I really hope that you take this on board and get yourself there because the sun is also going to help you feel so much better about your life. I've just come back from Ibiza and I feel like a new woman. So on that note, I really hope you enjoyed the show today. I've had such a good one. It's so great to be back here. We are going to have another amazing show next week, so make sure you don't miss it. It's going to be 11 a.m. Fubar Radio. Have a great week in the meantime. Don't forget to drink 2 glasses of water every day, and I'll see you next week.